family, the little girl that you see come to church with Debbie or with Becky, is her daughter Rena. And Becky has been babysitting her since Rena was just a babe in arms. And we have we got broken in as surrogate grandparents of their children. So that when Carter came along, we felt almost reasonably experienced. So I'm not going to say an awful lot about Natasha, but during the course of the meal, you have heard her refreshing laughter. And we have not known anything else but smiles and laughter from Natasha. Wonderful family. Her husband, Ryan, is one of the head radiologists here in Regina. And Natasha volunteers. I think she was or still is the head of some hockey organization. She is a trained nurse, although she hasn't practiced in the last 10 years. And she volunteers when she, you know, she just doesn't have enough on her schedule. So she volunteers at Luther College High School as fill-in receptionists when they are needed. And we could go on and on and on. And when I asked Natasha if she would be willing to share her story, she was a little hesitant and concerned about what she would have to say. And I think what she has to say will be inspiring when you realize from whence she has come and where she is today and the lives that she has touched over her journey of life thus far. So without further ado, I'm going to call upon Natasha now to speak to us.
That was such a nice introduction. Thank you.
You came, you
will. That was a really good lunch, too. So I was going to say good morning, but I guess it's good afternoon to each of you. And thank you for coming out on this very cold morning. Can you all hear me? I'm okay? Okay, good. So I'm privileged that you chose to join me today as I go through some of my life's journey with you. There will be some highlights. There's going to be some lowlights. But most importantly, I'm going to touch on people that have touched my life and my soul in a significant way, allowing me to see and believe with my heart that nothing really happens by accident. There's really not a lot of coincidences. At least that's what I believe. Now, whether we realize this or not, I believe that God really does have a plan for each of us. It may not seem that way at all times, especially when I'm going to start my story, but upon reflection, it's pretty clear that life does play out as it should. I have found a very diverse group of different angel messengers that have come through my life. They're all very unique, and they've all come from very unlikely places. I hope that you here today, sharing my journey, it will ignite a spark within each of you to think of yourself and some reflection. Ultimately, I do think that we are each wanting meaningful and genuine connections. I guess that's why we're all here today. So in some ways, it's like I've been in training for the last 40 years, because I am 40, to deliver our discussion together. And I used to read a quote, I still have a quote, it's in my office. It says, "Do not pray for an easy life. Pray to be strong so that you can shine and live the life that you are meant to live." So let's begin. 40 years ago, I was born in Regina. I was born to two teenage parents that were very young. They were encouraged to put me up for adoption, which they did, and this wasn't uncommon at that time. So I lived 4 or 5 months in foster care, and I don't know anything about that time of my life, but just before I turned 6 months old, I was adopted. And I was adopted by a couple. My dad was in the Air Force, and my mom was a retired hairdresser. My name was changed, so I was born Carla Ray, and they changed my name to Natasha Michelle, and life started with them. I have very few memories of this time of life because I was little, But on all accounts from my relatives or friends, they say I was a pretty happy, pretty joyful baby. Kind of about the same age as Carter right now, playing over here. So between the ages of 2 and 4, my family moved to Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. Because my dad was in the Air Force, we moved around a lot. We lived in a little tiny house, and I think it was always my natural demeanor to be pretty happy, pretty smiley, and look on the bright side of things. I like to be that way today, too. I do remember, I was told that by a neighbor, "Are you always happy?" That's about all I remember from being 2 to 4. But I think I always was, and I do remember liking to play outside. By the time I was age 4 to age 8, we moved to another house. It was in Dartmouth as well, just a little place. And I started to realize that my life and inside of our house, there was a lot of chaos. I began school, which I really did love. And in hindsight, both of my parents suffered from various mental illnesses. Life at home was crazy, for the most part. They did fight a lot, and they did have very bizarre behaviors, which only gradually got worse over time. School was an escape. I loved it. I remember being in grade 1, and it was my first introduction to anything related to religion. We had to take a religious studies class. I can remember feeling like I was the only one in the entire room that had no idea what the minister was talking about. None. Did not know anything. But what I do remember is in one of the classes, he said to me, "God is always with you. You're never alone." Only I had no idea he was talking to me. I thought it was for all of the other kids in the classroom. So we'll call that minister, who I don't remember his name, my messenger angel, number 1. His words did stay with me from time to time throughout my life. Messenger number 2 came along, another little angel. It was my next door neighbor, Lori Piper. This was when I was in grade 2. Lori was a great little friend, and she was playing with her mom's lighter one day, and she lit her pajamas on fire. She went to the hospital for 6 months, and her body was burned at about 80%. And they didn't expect her to live, but she did. When she returned home, I went to see her, to play with her. And probably not a very long play date at all. But we played, and when I got home, I said to my mom and dad at supper, "Why would God allow that to happen? Like, why?" Very clearly, my folks looked at me and swiftly said, "Why are you asking all this God stuff? This is nonsense. Where are you learning this? Are they teaching you this at school? Do not talk like this again, or you're not going to have any more play dates." So, it was at that moment I kind of knew we probably weren't going to agree on a few things, this being one of them, but probably a lot of other things as life went on. So, what little angel messenger Lori did teach me in hindsight is that everyone does have scars. At one point in life, people do have pain. It's just that hers were more visible from the burns. She's been in my thoughts many times throughout the years about being beautiful. And just like the Dove commercials or Oprah Winfrey, you might say, scars are everywhere, outside or inside, but inside she was a beautiful soul. By age 8, my dysfunctional family dynamics continued. There was yelling, there was fighting, and I was often sent to the basement to play by myself. My dad, I found out later, had a pattern of abuse towards children, and unfortunately, I was no exception. Angel messenger number 3 came into my life at a very unlikely place. My family had tried to take a couple of holidays. We had a camper trailer, and the 2 holidays that we did try to take were kind of failures, because they usually ended in a car breaking down or people fighting. Didn't work. But on attempt number 1 on our trip, we came across a really bad car accident. And while the emergency responders were tending to the mom, dad, and 1 child in the car that were seriously hurt, the other 2 children, a little girl and a little boy, came into our camper to sit and wait while their parents were being attended to. I remember the little girl sitting beside me, and there's a few pivotal things that I do remember. She said, "Do you think that God is going to take my parents? Why are your parents yelling and smoking so much?" Then she looked at me again, and she said, "Do you think we should pray for my mom? She looked like she was really hurt in our car." Now, I don't remember exactly what I said to her, but I do remember thinking, I didn't like that my family didn't seem normal, and it was kind of easy to cover up for their behaviors. And I remember not really wanting to feel helpless, which I did, because I couldn't help her family in the car. And I remember thinking, should we pray? Well, what would I say? And would that be okay for me to do? So I also remember, this was pivotal in me thinking, when I grew up, I wanted to help people. Through the chaos, for some reason, I did always feel like I was on a good path, like my glass was still half full. By age 8 to 11, we moved again. This time, we moved to northern Alberta, to another radar base. We lived in a very old trailer home, and for all accounts, we were poor, and we were kind of isolated. My mom used to do some sewing from time to time, and she tried to make friends in the neighborhood, but nothing lasted for very long. Her and Dad were just not good company to be around. And I do remember my parents telling me that it was good to move around. They didn't want to stay in one place because all the people around us were stupid. We needed to move away from everybody. In their own ill lives, it wasn't surprising that they said this. They didn't take a lot of responsibility for things. It was all the other people that were weird, not us. So, now, I do believe that there is no person on earth that is 100% bad all the time. They did try to make some good times for us when they were feeling up to it. We did try to go to McDonald's the odd time, but most things ended in chaos. Around that time of life, I spent 2 full summers with my grandma. She lived on a farm in Saskatchewan, and I loved it there. My grandma was extremely dear to me. She attended the Baptist Church in Kootenai, Saskatchewan, and she was their piano player. Now, I could go to church with her. I could learn songs about church with her. I could sing with her. I could laugh with her. And just overall, she was fantastic. She was my angel number 4. I remember telling her that I thought my parents didn't like it if I brought up God. And she said, "Well, this is how we can look at it, dear. Do you remember party lines? Does anyone remember what a party line was when you had shared the phone?" Yeah, the party line. Okay, well, they had a party line, and they had 6 people on their party line. So I would pick up the phone, and I would listen to all of the other conversations all the time. And she would say, "Natasha, dear, you're not supposed to listen to the people on the party line." So she said to me, "This is kind of how it can be. It's like the party line. You can talk to God, and no one has to know it. You can be quiet, and no one has to know it, and that's how you can get around your parents. Just always think of the party line." I liked it, and it was going to work for me. For a little while, anyway. So, it was kind of a secret. Unfortunately, my grandma passed away when I was in grade 5, but she did impact my life in great ways. By the time I was age 11 to 13, we were on the move again. Surprise! This time another radar base, and this time it was in Saskatchewan. It was kind of a downward spiral of dysfunction at home, and I do have very clear memories of this time. Things were coming directly off the rails. We again lived in a very old trailer home. Most of the time the roof leaked. We didn't have a car, and with the odd time when we could borrow a car, we were lucky if it didn't break down. I went to school one day, and a girl came up to me and said, "My mom had coffee with your mom." And I said, "Oh, really? That's so great." And she said, "Your mom told my mom that you were adopted. That's why you don't look like your parents." And I remember thinking, "Are you crazy? No, I'm not. This is not right." So I went home, and I said to my mom, "Could this be true? This is what a girl told me at school. Was I really adopted?" She said, "We will discuss it when your father gets home." Only then. So I started thinking, "Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness, where did I come from? Oh my goodness, who am I? Oh my goodness, this is crazy." Now, this girl in school, her name was Carolyn. She was messenger angel number 5, without really knowing it, because she would be a pivotal part of my life. And she did offer me some hope that I have a lot more to learn about me. My parents eventually told me that night that, yes, you were adopted. However, you should be much more grateful for all that we give you, and we are not going to talk about this again. I attended a little church down the road from where our trailer was parked. I would go there alone on Sundays. And it might seem kind of sad, this little kid that's like 11 and 12 walking to church alone, but I liked it. It was a time away from the chaos, and it was where there was nice people, and I didn't mind walking there alone. I did often feel a little uncomfortable because most of the things that they were saying at church, I couldn't really follow along. I didn't really know what they were trying to say, but I went anyway, took myself there. It was often met with harsh criticism when I returned home, but I went anyway. At this time of life, I do also credit friends, really good friends that seemed to get me through bad days. There was about 8 of them that lived around us. It was an escape to go to their house, away from ours. It was good. I remember thinking I would be really happy if I could just have a normal family. Maybe a nice car, maybe a nice house, just to be kind of normal. One of the quotes my parents used to say each year at Christmas time, which well into my 30s I heard, which drove me completely crazy, was always at Christmas. And it went something like this. This year we're not really going to celebrate Christmas. We don't have a lot of money, so we can't buy you gifts. So we're just going to pretend it doesn't really happen. And then the fighting would continue. And I remember thinking, has anybody told them what the real meaning of Christmas is? Like, anybody? I would try to tell them. Didn't work. It was met with deaf ears. My angel messenger number 6 was my grade 8 teacher, Mrs. Reichen. I went through a period of being kind of miserable after the adoption issue. I was confused. I was bitter. I was angry. I tried to get to parties. I was 13 and I tried drinking. I tried smoking. And I often tried swearing. It didn't get me very far, but I did it. One afternoon, this teacher pulled me aside into the computer room, and I can close my eyes and I can see her. And she said, Natasha, I need to talk to you in the computer room. So off I went. She looked right at me, and very clearly and firmly, she said, you seemed like such a nice girl when you first started coming to school here. What's the matter with you now? You've turned ugly and mean and unkind and uncaring. What's the matter with you? It stung me to the core. And I was quite ashamed, but she was right. I wasn't happy with her, but she was right. She went on to tell me that she did in fact believe in me, and she knew that I could get back on track. It would be her last day of teaching at the school, because she was going home to look after her husband, who was dying of cancer. But she wanted to make sure to talk to me before she left. Then came Angel. Where's my next angel? Somewhere on my notes. Angel number 7. Mrs. Moshinsky. She was the teacher that replaced Mrs. Reichen. Anyway, she had us do an activity because she was in love with the arts. And it was about writing in calligraphy a poem. It's this poem. You can read it after if you want. Some of you probably know this poem. Days That Are At It. So were there two parts of the poem? And she said to, I remember her saying to the class, if you can really read this poem and really believe it, life is good. The first part was, do not compare yourself to others. You may become vain and bitter, for always there will be greater and lesser persons than yourself. It was simple, but it spoke volumes to me. Part 2 of the poem was, be gentle with yourself. You're a child of the universe, and you have a right to be here. And whether or not it is clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. Therefore, be at peace with God, whatever you consider him to be. Now, there's a lot more to the poem, but those are my 2 favorite parts. Once again, we were on the move. Grade 9, we moved to Moose Jaw. I attended at Central Collegiate High School in Moose Jaw, and it was there that I met my husband, Ryan. My dad at that time was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, so now he had physical and mental health issues and was deteriorating. My mom tried to get out of the house every once in a while, and she tried to do some volunteer work, but life was kind of like walking around on eggshells waiting for another explosion of fights to occur. It was a pretty predictable pattern. My dad would buy a gift after a terrible episode of fighting, and then we were to forget everything happened, and we were to be normal once again. If they told me once, they told me 1,000 times at this point in my life that I owed them. They adopted me, and I would be looking after them in old age. It would be pretty much a full-time job. So grade 10 and 11 rolled around. I worked full-time, and I went to high school full-time. I worked at Woco, remember Woco, Kmart. I worked as a janitor, and I worked babysitting. At this time of life, Ryan was quite supportive of me. He was very shy, and I was the chatty one, which I know is hard to believe. We had stars in our eyes and some pretty big dreams. In grade 10, my dad had other things in his life that came to surface in our lives. A lady phoned one day, and she spoke to my dad on the phone. And my dad got off the phone, and he said to us, "Family, that was my daughter that just was on the phone. I had not told you about her." So my mom and I said, "What?" He had an adult daughter, and none of us knew. But she was coming, and she was coming for Christmas. Woo-hoo. It was true. Anyway, Gayanne came for Christmas, and it was a fairly stressful time. She was an adult. I was 16. When she was opening her gifts, a ring came out of one of the boxes. It was a purple stoned ring, and she looked at it, put it on her finger, and then she showed it to me. It was my ring. It was the ring that my grandma had given me. And I looked at her and said, "How did you get that in that box?" And my dad said, "Natasha, she's the real granddaughter. She deserves that. She needs to have that." And I remember thinking, you people are all crazy. But she was actually an angel messenger too. What number was she? She was 8. She was angel messenger 8 because she did teach me that things are just things. They can be taken away. Your big house can burn down, but what's important is the person that you are inside. Oh, I remember Ryan's parents asking me too at one point, "Do you like moving around? Did you like your life?" And I remember feeling very humiliated, very ashamed, and embarrassed. And I had all sorts of stories to tell them how good life was. I often escaped in books, some self-help books, quotes, which I love. And if you join me on Facebook, you'll see my quotes every day. I loved music, and I loved being with friends. And I did want to be a lifelong learner. For sure I did. I did want to ensure that my life was going to be a lot different as I got older than it was when I was younger. I did attend church every once in a while throughout high school. I tried a lot of different churches, even a Seventh-day Adventist church, which to this day sticks in my mind. They didn't want me to leave. They locked the door before I could get out. It was very interesting. But I did try a number of churches, and often went to church with Ryan and his family, which would be the church that we were married in years later. By grade 12, my messenger angel was number 9, my biology teacher, Mr. Hill. He watched me file into class day after day, exhausted, having worked probably 40 hours a week at the Woco. He suspected that my home life was bad, but by now I was living in the basement of an aunt's house. My mom and dad had retired to a small northern Saskatchewan community, and I stayed in Moose Jaw. He sat me down one day after biology class, and he started telling me about his family. He told me how much he loved his kids, how he always supported them, and he told me that he knew that I could succeed, and that I was a hard worker. He asked me what I wanted to do after high school, and I said, I was thinking about nursing. So he helped me gather all the tools that I needed to apply to nursing school. This was incredible to me, because he did all of this without wanting to be paid back. He was a critical part of my path. He did it out of kindness. He said, "You must follow your dreams. Did you know that my daughter wants to be a nurse too?" Life was meant to be lived, and thank you, Mr. Hill. Now, through all of this chaos, you think that it's quite chaotic. There was a lot of blessings too, and I knew it. Off to university I went in the fall. I had many student loans, and so I worked a lot throughout university. I worked at A&W, I served burgers, and sometimes I scrubbed toilets. I worked at janitor work, I worked on the university campus, and then I worked for 3 years on an Alzheimer's unit at a retirement home. All things that taught me many lessons. I was happy to be in the same city living as Ryan in Saskatoon, and first year university was amazing to me. Psychology and sociology classes and the study of human behavior, it was fascinating. I also had a number of great friends. My parents visited periodically between crises. On year two of university, I was accepted into the College of Nursing. This is where Angel Messenger number 10 came along. It was Eileen McLean. Eileen was the college registrar and through good luck became my mentor. Remember, there is no good luck. It wasn't a coincidence. She encouraged me to seek out my biological parents for my health history at first. Oh, and for my heart. And there's a whole luncheon that I could tell you about that, but I'm going to summarize this part, or we could be here all day. So I went through the process with Eileen and Ryan to support me. And I did find my biological mom, Diane, and her wonderful family. I also found my biological dad, Rex, and his wonderful family. And there were really not words to describe our meetings. They did accept me. It was amazing. And they each told me that, in fact, they did love me. I was really anxious because I kept thinking, oh, I just don't want to disappoint them. We are now in each other's lives and quite happy about that, and I'm eternally grateful for our connections. As you can imagine, my adopted parents did not deal with this well. They did meet some of my biological family, but they kept telling me, we'll meet them, but you owe us. Eileen taught me a lot more in life with life lessons, and this is another luncheon that I could talk an hour on, I'm sure, maybe 2 hours. But some of the things that she did teach me that stick out very clearly in my mind are to take care of your physical, spiritual, and emotional health. She told me that I was not responsible for other people's problems, including my parents, and that I needed to have healthier boundaries. She said, parents normally love their children unconditionally. Most do. And she said, you must follow your heart and always be honest. Most importantly, grudges are a complete waste of time and energy. There's no need to carry grudges. It's amazing, isn't it? She was smart. Eileen supported me through my marriage, which was a really stressful time in life. I was a full-time university student, I was pregnant, and I wasn't married. But she supported me. She also supported me through the birth of our first child, the oldest one, who's 18 now, Brayden. I always say, children are a gift from God, married or not, follow your journey. Just before I graduated from nursing with my degree and baby number two, Riley, born, Eileen passed away of cancer. She was a very sweet lady. Oh, yeah, at one of our last meetings, she did say to me, now remember, you should honor your children, but don't let them get away with too much because the little buggers will. I remember that a lot through as my kids are growing up. She also said, every time we left each other, when I left her office, she would always say, and God bless you, dear. I loved it. Days were full, and we were blessed to have supportive family and friends. Ryan's family was supportive, and colleagues at university were supportive. But life was busy. The College of Nursing was a constant learning curve for me, too. One activity that we did, which was really quite cool, was we had to write our own eulogies. Now, if you've ever tried to write your own eulogy, this is quite a thing to do. I wasn't very happy to have to do it, but I did. It was an activity to see if we saw ourselves the same way other people saw ourselves, or saw us. And to this day, I still just do this activity sometimes with my kids, and I'll say to them, so, do you think I'm like this? And they'll laugh and say, no, you're nothing like that. Let us write your eulogy. But I think I'll have to review that before I let them touch it. Anyway, it was a good activity, and I learned that in nursing. Following university, I graduated, I got a job as a clinical nurse, and I loved it. I loved being a mom, I loved being a wife, and I loved embracing the adventure. But it was a busy time of life. I wanted to be kind and caring and compassionate as a nurse, and I dreamed to be like that. Our kids were growing. They had lots of babysitters, and time was busy. Ryan was a full-time medical student, and we tried to make family time special. We worked hard. Sometimes we worked really hard, but we did it. My parents continued to fall further into trouble until one day my mom eventually left my dad and came to live with us. My dad was actually committed to a mental institute and ended up living there. And my mom lived with us for the course of a year. Eventually, we got her into counseling and we set her up in an apartment on social assistance. It was at this time that I took a job in a federal prison. Yes, I was a nurse in a federal prison, and it was an exciting job. I took the job because it paid really well, and I had to support my husband in medical school and my mom that was living with me. It was interesting. It was very evident when I first started working there, though, that it wasn't really a happy place. It wasn't really nice and friendly and cozy. It was definitely a prison. The guards and the other nurses spoke of the inmates with a lot of hate, and they were just kind of like objects. I knew that this was wrong, but I was a staff there, and I joined along, and I started talking like that too. Until one day, angel messenger number 11 came along. Maria. Now, Maria was another nurse, and she was also an elder. She took me to the sweat lodge area, which I didn't even know what it was, and she said, "I need to speak with you, dear. We need to have a serious discussion." So in a very quiet, gentle voice, she said, "Did you become a nurse to judge people?" She said, "Do you feel good about the way that you've been speaking about other people? I've heard you. Have you ever talked to one of the inmates to hear their life story?" I was absolutely humiliated. Ashamed? Of course. Terribly humiliated and ashamed. I even shed a few tears. I knew I shouldn't have been talking like this. She looked at me and she said, "Dear, we're all kind of one in the eyes of our great Creator. I know that you can turn yourself around. You shouldn't really let go of who you are, just to fit in. Listen to your intuition." So, humiliated with my head hung down, off I went. I booked some shifts to work over Christmas vacation. Well, I was scheduled a 7 a.m. to a 3 p.m. shift at the jail on Christmas Day. With Maria's lessons in mind, I got permission from the jail to bring in one Christmas orange and two homemade cookies for each of the prisoners on the wing that I would work on. And this was a big deal, because in the jail, they don't like you to bring in things. It's not really allowed, but I did get permission. Brayden and Riley were little at that time, and they helped me bake the cookies. And I remember telling them, "We're baking these cookies for people that don't get things at Christmas." Anyway, at 7 o'clock when I arrived for work, I was working on a unit with 40 men that were in prison for life. And I went around in front of their doors, and I put the orange and the cookies, and then I waited till 7:30. And at 7:30, that was when all the cell doors opened, and the prisoners would come out of the cells and be counted. So I waited, and I had no idea the reaction that was going to happen when they came out of their cell doors. The doors slammed, everyone walked out. Everyone's head went towards the ground. There were full-out, tattooed, scarred, kind of scary-looking folks looking at their feet. And then I looked at them, and some of them started to cry. I couldn't believe it. Some of them didn't ever remember ever having a Christmas gift. It was remarkable, really, but really simple to me. Each one of them thanked me, genuinely thanked me. Each one of them had a story. People are complicated. And the people that were in the jail, they were caught for their crimes, but it wasn't up to me to judge them. At this time in life, I also became a volunteer for the Children's Cancer Circle of Friends. I was the medical director for 4 years with the Children's Oncology Camp. And I welcomed Angel number 13 into my life. It was a young girl in grade 8. She was from Yorkton, and I don't remember her name. She was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and coming to camp was one of her last wishes. She came to our medical area one night, and she said to me, "I lost all of my hair with my chemo, but can I braid your long hair?" So I let her. So for 3 hours, she braided and unbraided my hair, braided and unbraided my hair, telling me all kinds of stories about her life. And then she said, "You know," she called me Mrs. Phillipson, "you know, Mrs. Phillipson, I'm not really afraid to die because I know I'm going to, but I'm excited to see God in heaven." I just listened. Many campers touched me. Most of them actually did. Matthew Epp was another one. At 14 years old, he wrote a book called Hope and the Dragon. It was about how hope can defeat your dragons. His dragon, of course, was cancer. He was very ill, but he did write a children's book, and he traveled around Canada to promote it and raise money for children's oncology. He was an inspiration through the way he lived and how he saw life. He signed a book of his, and he gave it to me. And I was so excited. I thought, oh, he probably wrote Love, Matthew, or something like that. I brought it. Here's the book. So I was excited. I opened it up, and I thought, I wonder what he wrote. He gave it to me, and he said, "Before I give you this, I want to tell you something. I wrote something that I think is really, really meaningful for you." Okay. Inside, he wrote, "Defeat your dragons. Love, Matthew." In the end, Matthew passed away at age 16, but he was my messenger number 13. Ryan completed medical school as a radiologist, and we moved to Regina. We had child number 3 and child number 4, Kyle and Rena. You know Rena. Maybe Kyle when he comes sometimes too. I retired from nursing to be a professional stay-at-home mom and a volunteer. Ryan's family continued to support us, often instilling family gatherings, the importance of health and eating well, and to slow down in life, to take time to enjoy it. My dad eventually passed away of complications of MS, and my mom visited in and out of our lives. Nothing was really predictable. Ryan's sister Melanie was also kind of inspiring to us, as she chose to walk the Camino Trail. She did this over the course of a month, and it's a spiritual journey that I someday would like to do as well. Friends were great, and friends supported us. I remember saying, you know, I don't think things happen by accident. I think I said that at the beginning too, didn't I? I don't think things happen by accident. Well, lo and behold, Brayden, one day, going to school, noticed that I was struggling a little bit. I had 4 kids, days were busy, a really busy husband who did a lot of call, and I was kind of struggling to hold it together. He pulled a sign off of the mailbox. The sign had a girl looking for work as a nanny. He brought it home at lunch, and he insisted that I call this helper. I did. We met her, and she's been a part of our life ever since. Welcome, Angel 14, Becky and her family. I know for certain that we probably could have never managed life as we know it now without Becky and her family in our lives. As Rena and Kyle grew, they attended Living Hope Church Preschool. We attended several churches occasionally, but nothing regularly. And in 2008, we built our family home on an acreage in White City, and we love it out there. Our older boys would attend Luther College High School, and the younger ones, White City School. Through the preschool teacher, I met Angel Messenger number 15, Joan. Joan has been a friend and a spiritual advisor and angel for me for several years. We talk about life, we talk about Bible studies, just about anything, actually, I talk about with Joan. And we talk about steps and paths in my life. She always reminds us, God loves us all, dear, and this does not have to be earned. Currently, we're working on the power of forgiveness. I need to blow my nose.
On the piano.
There we go. Okay. I'm a bit cold. Okay. So currently, we're working on forgiveness. My mom made her final appearance in our life this summer. She had a meltdown, and she said, "I really was never the daughter that she dreamed of having or that she would have chosen." She did say a number of other hurtful things, and she told me all this God stuff had probably really screwed me up. Currently, we don't have much of a relationship. She's not healthy, and it just can't work. But I do work with Joan on forgiveness. I guess in a way she kind of was an angel too, but I didn't give her a number. She taught me many things, mostly how I don't want to treat my own children or other people I care about. Then came John and Debbie Nelson. Of course, they're angel messengers 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Forget what number we're on. But they introduced Ryan and I both to music ministry at First Baptist Church through handbells. I've never felt so connected spiritually as when I stand behind those crazy bells and play them. Have you heard them? Aren't they fantastic? I love them. Anyway, it's wonderful on Sunday mornings to go and play. And it's where I know I should exactly be. It does make my soul glow, and it is by no accident. And I have a feeling that John probably suspected this before he told me to come to the handbell choir. I have a feeling. Anyway, I do love the bells. They seem like they ring out messages of hope, of courage, of joy, and of clarity. It's peace, faith, love, and forgiveness. It's inclusive, and it's wonderful. And Rena, of course, loves every moment of singing constantly with Debbie. In life, I've also started to take a little better care of myself. I exercise now, I go to yoga, I try to eat pretty well. I try to have daily meditations about a spiritual journey. However, I am very, very, very young in this area. And I do try to stay focused on today. I can't change the past, and I can't really predict the future, but today's a good day. My family and children really are daily messengers in my life, too. They didn't get numbers either, but they do teach me daily. I also have some amazing friends. But don't get me wrong, I do have like some down days or some bad days or some grouchy days, but not very many, and I certainly don't focus on them. It's important to note that the messengers that I talked about today, each and every one of them, have no idea that they were. Well, at least I don't think that they do. The ones that I spoke about, I've never actually told that they were. Although I think some of the people suspect it. Life is to be celebrated. And when I look back on my 40 years, I do see clearly that there was a path. And it's played out probably exactly the way it's supposed to have. I do have angels working in my life. And I feel like my life plan started out rocky for a reason. It was to give me tools to go on and to live the life that I have now. My goal really is to live daily in gratitude. I often have people come up to me that I've just met that say, "Oh, you are so lucky to have the life that you have. You're so privileged. Your husband's a doctor. You have a nice house. You get to travel. And you have healthy children." And yes, I'm very grateful for that. But I usually say to them, everyone has a story. Anne Frank, she said, "I feel like we all just want to be happy and belong. Our lives are all different, but the same. So I hope in some way my story today has made you think, food for thought, about your own life. We each choose to start a new story with new memories every day." In closing, my last quote by Brené Brown. "Owning our stories and loving ourselves and each other through the process of life is the bravest thing we can ever do."
Thank you very much, Natasha. I'm sure some of you are letting out a sigh. An unbelievable story. No doubt a movie script is being written someplace. I wanted Natasha to share because sometimes I think that our roads are all, our life journeys are always mountaintop experiences. And we sometimes forget those people in our lives who look upon us with envy because their lives were filled with a lot of valleys. And I thought it was very important, when you think of the speakers that we have heard over the last year or two, none have shared in depth, none have had the story. And I felt it was so important that we realize that there are valleys in life that many of us experience, and it's the lessons that we learn in those valleys that allow us to experience the mountaintop. And so I thank Natasha for sharing. In closing,